This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease from the pediatric section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick summary. Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, also known as peroneal muscular atrophy, is a common autosomal dominant hereditary motor sensory neuropathy caused by abnormal peripheral myelin protein that presents with muscle weakness and sensory changes which can lead to cable varus feet, scoliosis, and clawfoot deformities. Diagnosis is made with nerve conduction studies showing low nerve conduction velocities with prolonged distal latencies in the peroneal, ulnar, and median nerves. Treatment involves a multidisciplinary approach to address neuropathy, cable varus, and clawfoot deformities, as well as scoliosis. Now, let's get into the episode. With respect to epidemiology and incidence, Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease is the most common inherited progressive peripheral neuropathy and is seen in 40 in 100,000 patients. In terms of etiology and pathophysiology, Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease can be divided into two types: hereditary motor sensory neuropathy type 1 and hereditary motor sensory neuropathy type 2. So type 1 will involve abnormal myelin sheath protein that is the basis of this degenerative neuropathy and results in a combination of motor and sensory disturbances. Type 2 will involve an intact myelin sheath with Wallerian axonal degeneration that results in mild sensory and motor conduction velocities. With respect to the pathoanatomy, affected muscles that become weak include the peroneus brevis, tibialis anterior, as well as the intrinsic muscles of the hand and foot. In terms of the peroneus brevis, know that peroneal involvement is typically first and most profound and results in muscle imbalance and varus deformity. Tibialis anterior weakness results in drop foot. Finally, as far as weakness of the intrinsic muscles of the hand and the foot, be sure to check for wasting of the first dorsal interosseous muscles in the hands. Moving on to the genetics of Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, with respect to inheritance, know that autosomal dominant duplication of chromosome 17 is the most common. This codes for peripheral myelin protein 22, or PMP22, expressed in Schwann cells, which is the most common. Know that the genetics may also be autosomal recessive, or X-linked connexin 32. Orthopedic manifestations of Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease include pes cavo varus, claw toes, hip dysplasia, scoliosis, as well as hand muscle atrophy and weakness. Moving on to the classification, the major categories of Charcot-Marie-Tooth are types 1 through 7, and there is an X-linked category. In this episode, we'll go over type 1 and type 2. Type 1 is a demyelinating condition that slows nerve conduction velocity. Characteristics include 1. An autosomal dominant inheritance pattern, 2. Onset in the first or second decades of life, 3. Most commonly leads to cavus foot, 4. Normal life expectancy, and 5. Motor involvement more profound than sensory. Type 2 involves direct axonal death caused by Wallerian degeneration, not demyelination. Characteristics of type 2 is that patients are usually less disabled than in type 1, the onset will be in the second decade of life or later, and most commonly leads to a flaccid foot. Moving on to the presentation of Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, symptoms include motor deficits, lateral foot pain, and sensory deficits. With respect to motor deficits, initial symptoms are distal weakness and atrophy of the distal muscles, instability during gait, clumsiness, frequent ankle sprains, and difficulty climbing stairs. As far as sensory changes, know that sensory deficits are variable. Moving on to physical exam, in the lower extremity you may find a cavo varus foot, which is similar to Friedreich's ataxia with hammer toes or clawing of the toes. This is usually bilateral and symmetric in Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, and occurs due to unopposed pull of the peroneus longus, causing plantar flexion of the first ray and compensatory hindfoot varus. Know that cavo varus foot in these patients is initially flexible, but progresses to a rigid deformity. Motor weakness can manifest with peroneal weakness, anterior tibialis weakness, posterior tibialis weakness, calf atrophy, weak intrinsics, and claw toes. With respect to peroneal weakness, know that these are the weakest muscles around the foot and ankle. The anterior tibialis weakens next, but are typically stronger than the peroneals, and can lead to foot drop and swing initially, and later to a fixed Aquinas. Know that the posterior tibialis stays strong for a prolonged period of time. Calf atrophy is rarely significant if present. Finally, weak intrinsics include a weak EDB and EHB. Physical exam in Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease patients may also reveal hyporeflexia or areflexia. You should also perform a Coleman block test to determine if the hindfoot varus deformity is secondary to a plantar flex first ray versus an independent component. If the deformity corrects with the Coleman block, this suggests a forefoot-driven varus deformity. If the deformity does not correct with the Coleman block, this suggests a hindfoot-driven varus deformity. Finally, a rigid hindfoot will not correct into neutral. The upper extremity will manifest with intrinsic wasting of the hands, as well as a weak pinch and grasp. Finally, in terms of the spine, note that scoliosis may be evident on Adam's forward bend test. As far as other studies to obtain in the workup of Charcot-Marie tooth disease, you should obtain nerve conduction studies as well as genetic testing. In terms of nerve conduction studies, note that low nerve conduction velocities with prolonged distal latencies are noted in peroneal, ulnar, and median nerves. You can also see low amplitude nerve potentials due to axonal loss. As far as genetic testing, this is a key component for diagnosis of Charcot-Marie tooth disease. With respect to DNA analysis, PCR analysis is used to detect peripheral myelin protein 22 or PMP22 gene mutations. Finally, with respect to chromosomal analysis, duplication on chromosome 17 is seen in the autosomal dominant form, which is the most common. Now let's talk about cavus foot deformity, clontoe deformity, hip dysplasia, and scoliosis in Charcot-Marie tooth disease in a bit more detail. So starting with cavus foot deformity, as a quick introduction, the evaluation and treatment follows the same principles for cavovarus foot. The pathophysiology of a cavus foot deformity in Charcot-Marie tooth disease involves a plantar flex first ray that is the initial deformity. The cavus deformity is caused by a more normal peroneus longus muscle overpowering a weak tibialis anterior. These patients will also have weak intrinsics and a contracted plantar fascia. The varus is caused by a normal tibialis posterior overpowering a weak peroneus brevis. The treatment of a cavus deformity in the setting of Charcot-Marie tooth disease can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative modalities include accommodative shoe wear, which is rarely sufficient except in mild deformity, a full-length semi-rigid insole orthotic with a depression for the first ray and a lateral wedge, which is indicated in mild cavus deformity in an adult. Know that this is not indicated in children. A supramalleolar orthosis or an SMO, which is indicated for more severe cavovarus deformity recalcitrant to shoe wear accommodations. Ankle-foot orthosis or AFO, which may be needed if equinus is also present, resulting in equino-cavovarus foot deformity, and know that an AFO works best if equinus is a dynamic deformity, not a rigid deformity. Finally, you can also use a lace-up ankle brace and or high-top shoe or boots, which may be considered in moderate deformities when a patient does not tolerate the more rigid bracing with an SMO or AFO. Operative options for cavus foot deformity include soft tissue reconstruction, a first metatarsal dorsiflexion osteotomy, as well as triple arthrodesis, lateral calcaneal slide, or closed wedge osteotomy. Starting with the soft tissue reconstruction, this is indicated for a flexible deformity in adolescents with closed physis. It's also indicated for failed conservative management of fixed deformities. Soft tissue reconstruction is performed with a combination of the following procedures: plantar release, peroneus longus to brevis transfer, posterior tibial tendon transfer, lengthening of the gastrocnemius or tendo Achilles, as well as a possible Jones transfer or transfers. So a plantar release, that is plantar fascia plus or minus a Steindler stripping, for example release of the short flexors off the calcaneus, is indicated for a cavus deformity. Peroneus longus to brevis transfer is indicated for a plantar flex first ray. The rationale is that it decreases plantar flexion force on the first ray without weakening eversion. A posterior tibial tendon transfer is indicated for muscle imbalance where the posterior tibialis typically is markedly stronger than the everters and maintains strength for a long time in most cavovarus feet. You may consider transfer of the posterior tibialis to the dorsum of the foot if there is severe dorsiflexion weakness of the anterior tibialis. In terms of lengthening of the gastrocnemius or tendo Achilles, this is indicated for true ankle equinus. In terms of outcomes, know that gastrocnemius recession produces less calf weakness and can be combined with plantar release simultaneously. Tendo Achilles lengthening should be staged several weeks after plantar release. Finally, a Jones transfer or transfers of the EHL to the neck of the first metatarsal and lesser toe extensors to the second through fifth metatarsal necks is indicated when there's toe clawing combined with cavus foot, and know that this is performed if the indication is met and time permits. Moving on to first metatarsal dorsiflexion osteotomy, this is indicated in the setting of a flexible hindfoot cavus deformity, that is with a normal Coleman block test and or passive hindfoot eversion past neutral. Finally, triple arthrodesis lateral calcaneal slide or closed wedge osteotomy is performed if the deformity does not correct with a Coleman block test. Moving on to clawtoe deformity, note that ankle dorsiflexion weakness may result in the recruitment of toe extensors for assistance. And in the setting of intrinsic muscle weakness, there is increased toe extensor activity that can lead to clawtoe deformity, which becomes rigid with time. Treatment of clawtoe deformity is operative. The Jones procedure is indicated for symptomatic claw toe deformity, which has failed non-operative measures. The technique involves transfers of the extensor tendons of the great and lesser toes to the metatarsal neck. The goal is to increase contributions to ankle dorsiflexion and decrease clawing in order to relieve pain on the dorsum of the toes and the plantar aspect of the metatarsal heads. Moving on to hip dysplasia, note that hip dysplasia is sometimes associated with Charcot-Marie tooth disease, however, is typically less than 10% of the time. However, keep in mind that it may present during adolescence in ambulatory patients. The treatment for these patients will be pelvic osteotomy, which is indicated for symptomatic hip dysplasia. As far as outcomes, know that there's a higher rate of sciatic nerve palsy after surgery in these patients. Finally, let's end this review session talking about scoliosis in the setting of Charcot-Marie tooth disease. Know that this often occurs in children with Charcot-Marie tooth disease approximately 10 to 20% of the time. There is a characteristic left thoracic and kyphotic curve that distinguishes it from idiopathic scoliosis. The treatment can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes bracing. However, bracing is rarely affected, so typically it is not used. Operative options include fusion and instrumentation, which is indicated for a progressive deformity with scoliosis of greater than 50 degrees. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic might be tested. First question. An orthotic that provides laterally based hind foot posting support would be most useful for which of the following conditions? And the choices are 1. Painful accessory navicular, 2. Middle facet coalition, 3. Flexible flat foot, 4. Metatarsus adductus, and 5. Flexible cavovarus foot. The correct answer to this question is 5. Flexible cavovarus foot. So lateral support in the form of hind foot posting would be most beneficial for a patient with a flexible cavovarus foot. Cavovarus feet may be seen in multiple conditions, including Charcot-Marie tooth disease. The initial deformity is plantar flexion of the first ray, which is often followed by compensatory hind foot varus. In flexible deformities, orthotics that post the lateral forefoot and lateral heel should be utilized. Schwend et al. Reviewed the etiology, diagnosis, and management of the cavus foot in children. They note that shoe inserts with lateral support can be used in patients when there is flexibility to the hindfoot. Recession of the orthotic to accommodate a plantar flex first ray is also beneficial. And moving on to the final question. The cavus deformity in Charcot-Marie tooth disease is characterized by what muscular imbalance? And the choices are 1. Peroneus brevis overpowering peroneus longus, 2. Tibialis anterior overpowering tibialis posterior, 3. Achilles overpowering the tibialis anterior, 4. Extrinsic toe flexors overpowering intrinsics, and 5. Peroneus longus overpowering tibialis anterior. The correct answer to this question is 5. Peroneus longus overpowering tibialis anterior. So the etiology of the abnormal foot posture in Charcot-Marie tooth disease usually results from peroneus longus overpowering tibialis anterior. The peroneus longus acts to plantar flex the first metatarsal, raising the arch height and tilting the hindfoot into varus. Thus, the Coleman block test allows one to check the hindfoot flexibility by eliminating the effect of the plantar flexed first ray and observing its effect on the hindfoot. Additionally, the peroneus brevis is weak, allowing it to be overpowered by the posterior tibialis, resulting in adduction of the foot and varus. Bilateral pes cavovarus is the most common pathologic foot deformity seen with Charcot-Marie tooth disease. A passively correctable and thus flexible cavovarus foot may be appropriately treated with plantar fascial release, dorsal closing wedge osteotomy of the first metatarsal, and peroneus longus to peroneus brevis tendon transfer. A calcaneal osteotomy may also be indicated. Holmes and Hansen present a level 5 review of Charcot-Marie tooth disease. They report that the specific components of the disease process includes hindfoot varus, anterior or forefoot cavus, and often claw toes. The study by Ward looks at long-term follow-up of cavovarus foot correction with, in part, peroneus longus to brevis transfer to eliminate that muscle imbalance. That's all for this review about Charcot-Marie tooth disease. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.